You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus.
No, you're not.
Yes, you are. Well, not really. Yeah, so a little bit of technical difficulty. You'll notice that this is an audio-only show. Thanks, Nicole. But
crap, it's like it's intended for iPods.
I know. We're podcasting like it's 2006.
This is the special throwback edition of Fanboy Versus.
Has this show, I mean, how many episodes of this show were non-video? Like, what, three?
I think there was a couple.
Really? Okay. I don't remember. Yeah. Anyway.
So are they just seeing our Skype avatars?
They're not. There's nothing. There's no video.
Man.
There isn't.
I'm going to have fun just replacing avatar after avatar.
See, that's right. That's what I'm saying. It's like
people in the video something to look at.
No, there. I mean, there is. There. Well, it's a splash. It's the splash screen for the for our what to go to look up stuff. Anyway, all this is exciting things for people who are not even seeing a video at all. Anyway. So it is Fanboy versus New York Comic Con as the floodgates opened and a ton of news was released over the past week. So much so that Chris McFeely is holding up a notepad full of information that he is going to lay on us that you can't see, but I promise you he has it. So
I bet that news is so hot that notepad's burning up.
It is. It's probably smoking. Right now. And it would be cool if you could see it.
Yeah.
But you can't. So, all right, Chris McFeely.
Special effects are so expensive.
This is amazing. The 1 million, the 6 million peso man. that's $152 we'll never see again. Anyway, I love robot chicken. I don't want to tell you. Anyway, okay. So news, Chris McFeely.
Oh, Family Guy.
No. It was robot chicken. I was doing
Strong Bad. Okay, I wasn't doing anything from those television programs.
Talk about throwbacks.
Strong Bad. That's good.
No, okay,
it's like it's 1998 now. Holy
no,
crap!
It just comes sometimes. It's the first thing I think of. You know.
Homsar. That's the only thing I remember from that. Homsar. Kill Homsar.
In loved Homsar.
God. That's actually where I got Bavesar from. So,
See?
Yeah.
What is it, Strong Bad?
Anyway, okay, so news.
News. So, yeah, we were getting distracted there. Okay, I'm going to break this news down. Gonna have to hit a lot of this quick. All right. First of all, I think this was from before NYCC. We just learned this from beforehand. Last week's confirmed Gillen McKelvey Amateurs book. It's Young Avengers. Young Avengers lives. That's our first bit of news. It is Hulkling. It is Wiccan. It is Little Loki. It is Kate Bishop Hawkeye. And in a surprising move, it's also the protector, Marvel Boy, Novar, who presumably Kieran Gillen is going to rescue from the toxic clutches of Bendis.
Thank God.
Wow. Bravo, sir.
Yikes.
Sounds awesome now.
Oh, well, it always did anyway. But it always did. Oh, and of course, sorry, Miss America. I knew I was forgetting somebody. Miss America.
Miss America.
Well.
Okay.
Yes. Because I don't know what Bendis has been playing at with Marvel Boy. I mean, he brought him back, reinvented him completely, and then never used him. And in reinventing him, completely obliterated anything that made him interesting, and then never used him for anything again, ever, anyway.
So this is Bendis, is then.
Yeah, well, okay. Gillen has said he's going to try and take him back to his Morrisonian roots.
That'd be awesome.
That's to be looked forward to. Speaking of Bendis and things that are cosmic, one of the pieces of news out of NYCC, which we all basically knew about anyway long in advance, but it's been officially confirmed, is Bendis and Stephen McNiven are on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Huh.
Hmm. The movie. You're talking the movie.
No, the new Guardians of the Galaxy series.
They're doing this crazy thing where they're going to put out a book.
No way! Really?
We gotta write this book to convince you why we're making a Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And just gets put in charge of it. It gets a film.
Yep.
Or the other way around, to be honest. And then connected with that, I mean, that's not particularly inspiring news anyway, because it's like, you think after all this time with the Avengers, they'd realize team books aren't Bendis' strong suit, but he gets another one anyway, whatever. Then over in more cosmic news, even more disheartening is the affirmation of the long suspected and in the wings, Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness on Nova.
Epic fail.
The trombone.
That'll save me $4.
See what you did there. Yeah.
That'll save me $4 a month.
Yep.
Because it'll be $4.
Yeah, I will not be reading that.
No.
What else?
New Superman book. Did you get that?
No, hang on. No, I got this is broken up by company. Go with me here on this.
Oh, all right. Marvel. Sorry. Okay.
Secret Avengers will be entering the Marvel Now banner. They won't be going back to number one, I don't believe, if I've read this correctly, but Nick Spencer is returning to write them. Bit of a surprise. First run was decent, but not groundbreaking.
I don't know, that one issue was pretty groundbreaking.
Which one?
The Abraham Lincoln statue.
Oh yeah, okay, that was awesome. You know, yeah, giant stone robot Abraham Lincoln Nazi puncher. yeah, but it wasn't quite followed up on, shall we say?
No,
I don't know. I mean, Secret Avengers still seems to be struggling to find its footing and a reason for itself to be, you know.
I'm surprised they're continuing it, really.
I know, really. With Remender busy on Uncanny, you think that would just, okay, just stop now. That's enough, guys. Thanks.
Yeah.
But that's gonna keep happening. Then in Daredevil is also going to join the Marvel Now banner as well. No relaunch there either, but no change in creative team either. It's still weird and everything, but that's happening as well. And they're going to go back to plot threads that have apparently been in place since issue 3, but I don't remember anything dangling from that far back, which probably means it's good because it means it's all very tied up and neat, so that's good. In miniseries territory, it's been announced that Scott Gimple and Mark Texera will be knocking out a weekly Punisher miniseries in January, Punisher Nightmare. Will it be as good as Greg Rucka's Punisher?
No. I'm just going to tell you, no. I want my Greg Rucka Punisher. I'm not going to buy it. Even Mark Texera can't convince me to get it.
Okay. Well, then, there was a rhetorical question. Yeah.
You get to know that triple has an opinion.
it's no. I'm sorry. It's just no. Just
no.
Well, he can go fight demons again. I'm fine with that.
No, you're not. Don't joke. The other miniseries Marvel has announced by Cullen Bunn is Deadpool Killustrated.
This looks cool. I've seen this. This actually is kind of awesome looking.
In which Deadpool will travel through various literary classics, killing folks.
Yeah.
Because he can.
Seems to be another bit of fourth wall breakery, you know. Which Deadpool really isn't about and hasn't been for an awfully long time, even though he talks to his caption boxes. But that the internet still seems to believe that that is the most defining aspect of Deadpool.
You know,
I mean, come on.
You know
and Moby Dick sounds kind of awesome, I think.
Yeah,
I think that sounds kind of awesome.
I'm just really tired of Deadpool things like video games and things playing up to this internet culture misconception of what the character is about. And this is doing exactly that. But Cullen Bunn's writing it, so to be fair, it'll probably be decent. Yeah. Let's see, what else did Marvel have to say? Their TV panel, they showed some Avengers Assemble. It's blatantly not in continuity with Earth's Mightiest Heroes, but we all knew that was a lie anyway. We all knew that was spin and new speak, so that's happening. Ultimate Spider-Man has confirmed for a second series. We knew
Damn
that
it.
Already. It doesn't make it any better. It's
Damn it.
Spider-Man. time cartoon ever. It's even worse than Spider-Man Unlimited. Yeah, they said it. That's right.
What's bad is I actually gave up on it, and I watch a lot of crap.
You know, we talk about how much we hate it, but you know, it does have Coulson in it. So
it does have Coulson in it, and that's why everybody figured Coulson was there at the panel.
Yeah,
and then a funny thing happened.
Anything happened on the way to the con?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Marvel had all this here news, but there was this one bit of news that came out that pretty much is the biggest piece of Marvel news, if not the biggest piece of news out of the entire convention, which is that Coulson, or to give the actor his actual name, Clark Gregg, had to think for a second there, pardon me, will be headlining the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Coulson live? Does Coulson live, or is it Robot Coulson? Who knows?
I'm hoping for Robot Coulson.
Yeah, they did mention the LMD, so
they made an LMD crack, but I think they were just riffing on what fans had joked about.
Yeah, because like, they mentioned Vision too.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a reference to LMDs in the Avengers film, you know, so people thought that was supposed to shadow what was going to happen to Coulson. I don't know, but it's happening anyway.
I think it would be kind of funny if, like, you know, Coulson was always just an LMD. We just didn't know it.
It's just a warehouse of Coulson somewhere.
It's like, how was he, like, everywhere, always finding the Avengers? It's because there was a bunch of LMDs. You know, he's always,
you know, I think there was more than one of that guy. You don't see.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I've even got my Marvel Now preview book, and Coulson's in it, so, you know.
He is, yeah, because he is going to be in Secret Avengers.
Yeah.
He and Nick Fury Jr. and some other guys that you care less about. No, I'm sorry. Coulson and Nick Fury Jr. and some other characters you care less about.
Yeah. Actually, this was in...
parcel that sentence out.
This was in Hulk. This was the Hulk preview.
Oh, it was in there as well. Oh, well, they're spreading everywhere, but they're going to be in Secret Avengers. So actually, I guess that's kind of finding a place for them and making that their book would actually be finding something to do with Secret Avengers. So I guess that's a good thing. Okay, let's see. Happening over at DC, there was... Rob Liefeld had another little micro-bitch during the week where he was, you know, basically saying... Oh, this stuff. Basically, he was blowing stuff, you know? But in a really, like, it's like, here's what's going to happen. Yeah. And it's like, fuck off, Rob.
Yeah. Really?
Stop ruining it for everybody, Rob. But not everything he said came true. He said that Legion lost Grifter, Blue Beetle, and maybe something else, but I'm forgetting what now offhand. Frankenstein, we're going to be announced cancelled. Of that, only Blue Beetle has been confirmed cancelled thus far, and it wasn't even announced, it was just somebody was talking about something else and said Blue Beetle would be ending.
Yeah, well, is that a shock, though? I mean, I could have told you that book was ending, you know. I mean, I could have guessed the list that he said anyway.
Well, that's second time they've cancelled that character's book, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Blue Beetle just can't...
I would be a little sad about it. Even though I don't read it, I know that it's a good book that's popular with its readers. You know, it's not like it's one of those books that's just Drac and everybody bitches about it, or one of those books like Blue Beetle.
So is Blue Beetle going to show up in a backup of Justice League International? Oh, wait.
Oh!
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, at the end of JLI, you know, he got launched into outer space, so, you know.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, ooh, that's a good question. Have 26 of the original 52 been canceled yet?
No, he couldn't possibly be up that.
That would be awesome.
Yet. I'll have to count that up.
I want my prediction to come true.
But I've been, as I say, only Blue Beetle has been announced canceled out of those whatever. Now that was announced, I believe, I say announced. That was mentioned while the next. New DC title, which seems to be we're heading towards a fourth wave in January, or sometime soon anyway, in which we will have this new book, Threshold, which is going to be by Keith Giffen. And with art by Tom Rainey and Scott Collins, which is going to be a cosmic book and is going to spin out of the Green Lantern New Guardians annual that will be coming.
Keith Giffen do a cosmic book? Get the hell out of here.
No.
Get the fuck out, Keith.
No. Surely not.
I'm just talking about Giffen.
Yeah.
God.
And along with that, of course, we already knew about Justice League of America. Mm-hmm. That's coming up. And then the other book that's been announced, well, I say announced, Scott Snyder writing, Jim Lee drawing, a new Superman title that has thus yet not been titled.
What the hell?
The rumor is it'll be Man of Steel, but...
I think they've specifically said it's not going to be called Man of Steel.
Really?
It's weird, because...
That would make sense.
That would make sense. But when did DC do things that make sense?
Yeah, like, the next bit of news, which I don't know if it makes merit to be put here or not, is new creative team for Action. What the hell?
Yeah.
Well, you know? we knew that Grant Morrison was leaving.
Right.
And they've announced that Andy Diggle is going to be the new writer.
Yeah.
And Tony Daniel is going to be the artist.
What the hell? Going
from one of the most A-list writers in all of comicdom to writer 73B-XY.
Yay. Well, there's a book I get to save money on.
I was hoping for who's the person that's been doing the backups again?
Surely Fitch.
Those are good.
Yeah.
They're good. It's like, fair enough. I will tell you one thing, though. And that one thing is, I'm happy to have been proven wrong on this one, which is fair play that they are not keeping it 5 years ago. They are bumping it up to be concurrent with the other books.
They are?
Yeah. So at least fair play to that. They are allowing Morrison's 16 issues to be their own distinct entity creatively in storytelling. They're not trying to turn the book into the always 5 years ago prequel book. That is about the only good thing. This is not that I have anything against Andy Diggle. I don't, honestly.
I don't have anything.
I don't even know if I've read anything by Andy Diggle. I'm trying to think. Yeah. But
didn't he do some stuff for IDW?
I don't know. He definitely wrote some Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
He definitely did some Thunderbolts.
Yeah, he's done some Marvel stuff, I know.
Yeah, No Harm might be fine. Dropped like a hot rock.
Oh, yeah, no interest in reading it whatsoever. In fact, though, I'll say that I would trade... I'm going to probably end up just trading Action for this Snyder book, so...
I mean,
how can I not? You know, Jim Lee art and Scott Snyder writing.
Not even for Jim Lee art. Don't even pretend. It's all for Scott Snyder.
It's pretty much all for Scott Snyder. I mean,
let's not even acknowledge that Jim Lee's on that.
The dude is an unapologetic huge Superman fanboy. I mean, the dude is writing one of the best Batman books I've read in a while, and. Yeah. He wears a Superman shirt every fucking where he goes. So, you know, this guy definitely wants to be, doing Superman. So I'm excited for him. I mean, to be honest, like, I'm just excited for him to get to write, you know, a mainline Superman title. But
I'm looking at it and I'm going, the main Superman book is such a floundering mess of inconsistency right now. Is it, why are you making a new one? Why not just put him on that?
Well,
no, I'd because... say it makes more sense to start over and over.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we're missing this one to die, and we're just going to do, like, whatever, you know? Right. Man of Tomorrow.
Just go for the family one. What is it called? The Replace Tiny Titans family?
Oh, the Superman family or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, just read that for Superman.
No. But, I mean, I definitely want to read the Scott Snyder, though. I mean, that's
no,
like...
I will check this one out because... I've still never quite stopped kicking myself over not getting on Snyder's Batman at the very start.
Oh,
so
yeah.
This time around, I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah, for sure.
From the beginning and not have to trade chase. Let's see what else DC got going on. Well, we knew that Ivan Reis is moving from Aquaman to Justice League. Just in time for a crossover between Aquaman and Justice League.
Wait a minute. How do you do a crossover with a character that's on the book?
Seems to be essentially that it'll be an Aquaman story that will spill over into Justice League.
It's a team up between Aquaman and Aquaman.
It's an Aquaman team up book. If
Who
you
wins?
Thought
the reader wins,
is one Aquaman not enough for you? How about two Aquaman?
Like, in anticipation, we were titling this Aquaman.
The greatest heroes of two worlds.
Well,
up current New 52 Aquaman with Brave and the Bold Aquaman.
Well, heroes of two worlds.
I would buy 50 copies of that, and that would be outrageous.
Do you think they could have, like, fish duels? Where, like, they make fish fight each other and...
They take swordfish and they fight with the swordfish.
But they don't actually fight. They just have the swordfish do the fighting.
Yeah, they just sit down. And
they just sit down drinking coffee and watch the... ting, ting, ting.
A swordfish and a sawfish. There you go.
Of course, like they would team up to defeat the real villain.
A swordfish and a hammerhead shark.
A sword and a hammer?
And Ocean Master.
Oh, wow. Yeah, let's get that book.
Yeah,
let's get that made. But no.
But instead.
Instead, let's have a replacement artist on Aquaman. But the good news is that the replacement artist is Paul Pelletier, who's rather good. She-Hulk.
And he's also not okay, Chris Ripley, I swear to God, just shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear anything about Dan Slott's fucking She-Hulk. Beyond that comment. I want 1 week off.
What?
I didn't say nothing.
I didn't say anything.
1 week off.
Gosh, I wish you could see the video. I'm almost crying.
Almost.
Almost.
And I haven't said enough.
I'm
anyway.
Almost turning green with...
Almost. Anyway.
You know what I think is great that people who bought the... Remember I was telling you last week, guys, that the new volume of the Marvel graphic novel collection that's being released in the UK was the first volume of Dan Slott's She-Hulk, mm-hmm. and I was telling you how great that was. It's great that people who have bought it and read it have come back to me to tell me how much they enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
I'm like, yeah, you should. It's all out of print. Thanks, Marvel.
Good job. Thank you, Marvel. I wish people would...
But, you know, Marvel aren't the only company that's enjoying not making their products available to their fan base. Such as was the case with DC on Cartoon Network this morning.
Yeah. I didn't hear... I never heard grumbling, but I don't know what the grumbling is. So tell me the news. What is going on?
You shall hear.
The grumbles. The grumbles were that at the very last moment, it was preempted by, I believe, repeats of the new How to Train Your Dragon series.
Oh, well. I mean...
And it was very abrupt. And it's off the schedule for next week as well. And everybody's going, what the hell? Where's all this? It's only been back for 2 weeks. And not to worry, though, because Cartoon Network did a tweet just after about 5 hours, just when the rage was good and peaked, you know? Don't worry, they did a really nice, cheerful tweet. It's like, hey, DC fans, have you heard? DC Nation will return with all new episodes in January.
In January?
Yeah.
Okay. January? Like,
hey, way to misjudge the situation ever so slightly, Cartoon Network.
Okay. Explain this to me. The second season just started, Green Lantern, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yep.
The second season of Justice is already badly stalled.
What?
Wow.
The hell?
Wow.
Why even start? Like, why not even push the premiere back until, like, freaking January? Why did they premiere this?
Well, it's such a cancellation. You have to assume something's going on.
Wow.
Because I guess Guy Gardner just didn't get enough love, and they need to show it to you guys again in January.
Someday, someone is actually going to let Greg Weisman finish one of his TV shows.
Someday.
Probably.
It could happen.
Interference. Maybe Young Justice is that show. But it doesn't feel like we're moving towards that right now.
I don't know. I want to see the end of this. Young Justice has been really good. I'm pissed.
It's bad.
In fact, you could say that I'm green with rage.
Blood. We'll
okay,
kill
done.
You from the call. Anyway.
The one other bit of news I had for DC, I was going to save that till the end, but the segue opportunity was just too good. which is that David Goyer is going to be returning to DC and teaming with Geoff Johns to do a 13-issue thing.
Thing?
Yes, we don't know.
Okay.
Oh.
13 issues. That's a while. That's a while for DC and not canceling something. But Geoff Johns is on it, which means they can't cancel.
Yeah. No. Okay, let's see. What else is going on then? IDW have released some more details about their upcoming crossover event Infestation-style job at from the start of next year. It's kind of like Infestation 3, but it's not an Infestation. It's not being built as Infestation because it's Mars Attacks.
Oh, yay. And let me guess. It's Ghostbusters, Turtles, Transformers, and...
It's Ghostbusters, Transformers, Kiss, Judge Dredd, Zombies vs. Robots, and Popeye.
What?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I was wrong.
You guys need to be reading Mars Attacks because it is some of the funniest things out there. I'm not kidding. I am excited for this.
I'm going to see Popeye punch a Martian in the face.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
them Martians is fucked if they go up against Popeye.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine them up against the Transformers. It still doesn't seem...
Well, this one, we haven't had a lot of details on the Transformers one, but it's apparently set, like, in the future or something. It might be a non-continuity piece, which is, I mean, really, like, there's no room in what the books are doing right now for a doofy crossover like that to happen, I don't think. But they have confirmed it's being written by Shane McCarthy. Yeah.
Oh! Well, that's something that doesn't need reading, isn't it?
I mean, I posted it on the Allsborg. I was like, I'm really surprised with that because it's like, it seems like a strange backslide to go back to that after finally, in the last year, finally listening to what fans have been asking for and giving it to them and the result being like genuinely great comics that are being well reviewed by comic book websites and not just Transformers fandom, and they just genuinely seem to be reaping the rewards of doing it, and they've got this thing coming up where they're going to put these pack-in comics in with toys as well. It was announced at the Transformers panel as well. And it's like, that's because IDW has improved their standing to the point where they can do this now. So let's dredge Shane McCarthy up. Let's have Drift Conquers the Martian.
Shane McCarthy's not busy. I mean, you know, he can take time off from Donald's to
write. I don't know. It's like, I'm sure we'll get, it's like, just let's see how many Martians Drift kills.
God.
So that's happening. But in other IDW news, now, Nicole, if you haven't heard this one, you'll enjoy this because this is pretty insane. The pre-order numbers are in for Ponies.
Yay! What is it? Is it good? Is it good?
It's insane.
I have my pre-order. Yeah!
Yeah, yeah. The pre-orders for My Little Pony number one are presently at 90,000.
What? What? Are you kidding me?
We have an actual number for bronies now.
Is
there
it 98 or something?
No, well, no,
what the hell?
Remember, now, the trick with this is that it does have an exceptional number of variant covers, including six variants with one of each of the main six, as I believe they call them, over in Bronyland.
This would be one I'd be suckered into getting all of them.
Well, not that I'm casting aspersions on bronies or anything, but... They're gonna get all the covers, so you know that's a lot of variants. And of course, you know, not
they
like
they should
uncanny,
make a
uncanny
cover where Joker's face is like over one of them.
Pinkie Pie's Joker would be awesome. I want to see that.
Oh wow!
Although, to be fair, it's got good talent working on it. I won't read it myself. I can't read it. I can't, no. More power to IDW for pulling in pre-order numbers like that. But
I mean, that is insane.
That is awesome. That's
crazy.
Awesome.
No, it's got 6 regular variant covers on its own before you start counting the actual retailer variants, of which there are several.
God.
Yeah, you know, those are the. I think I'm not sure how the order breaks down on them. I'm not sure if it's like I think it's like with all IDW's other stuff that covers A and B, you just order the ordinary comic and they ship them to you in an equal ratio. You can't order covers separately, but then the retailer incentives are under separate order codes, so you can order them separately. So if anybody wants to get the 6 covers, the standard 6 covers, like, you gotta get 6 copies, and so multiples of 6 will be what the retailers have ordered them in. You know. So, you know, but hey, I mean, I still think, I mean, a lot of people like sort of trumpeting this as a triumph for all ages comics, and I'm not belittling the book's achievement, but it's not achieving these numbers because it's an all ages comic. It's achieving these numbers because of a slightly creepy adult fan base that has entirely.
What are you saying, McFeely?
Yeah, I would say that's pretty adult driven.
You gotta be glad there's no video this week.
I'm just saying that adults have pretty much entirely co-opted the franchise and become its most recognizable figurehead, front buyers, funders, to the exclusion of its actual target audience in the popular culture mentality.
Don't worry.
Yeah, but 90,000 is still friggin' insane, and I will be in. I'm gonna be interested to see just like where the figures go after that. You know, I mean, are the bronies gonna put their money where the mouth is whenever it comes down to dropping?
I'll drop 18 bucks
on one comic. You know, wow. No, sorry, that's not right. $25 on one comic 6 times. I said it already when this was announced. I will have my eye on it out of legitimate curiosity, not out of an attempt to vilify or vindicate or.
I think we need to review it. I think somebody needs to review.
Oh,
really?
Oh,
you think so?
You don't think that day's not coming when I'm going to not read it? Oh,
I think we should make it top of the show, even if I don't read it.
Yeah.
Hey, don't knock it, man. That's an awesome idea.
I mean, I'm not knocking it.
Those numbers, we might pick up a whole new audience, JD.
I will send you all, you three, enough money to go download it. How's that?
You may just recall as well, incidentally, that this the writer of this is Kate Cook, who was the artist of the Pixie Squirrel Girl thing we talked about in AVX last week.
Yeah,
that got me interested a little because that was so awesome. Yeah.
I found out after the fact that Katie Cook actually does a web comic called Gronk, which is about a little girl monster who leaves the forest and all the other monsters to go and live with people. And it's quite a cute and popular webcomic that she writes as well as draws. So she is a writer artist as well. And it's like Triplett said. I would be lying if I said that didn't make me go, well, it's a good talent on it. No.
I don't. I guess it's just that it's. I really just don't have strong feelings on it one way or the other. I mean, I'm glad like it's pulling in those numbers. I mean, that's totally insane.
I don't have strong feelings on it either. I just have one strong feeling.
Yeah, you just have a single strong feeling.
I just know that if the My Little Pony Transformers crossover doesn't happen, I'm going to be very sad.
I will be so sad if that doesn't happen.
I'm just
Stars Attacks My Little Pony.
My God, it's going to be IDW. It might be in that infestation Mars Attacks thing.
That would be awesome.
Be too soon. It'd be too soon for it, but I would be surprised if. Well, I mean, first of all, we have to see what happens. It's only a miniseries, so we have to see where it goes.
Yeah,
with these numbers. I mean, we'll see how it. I mean, of course, the big tell is is not where it starts, but where it ends.
Well, and that's the deal too. It's like, you know, so many people are like on, it's just like you said, for the multiple, you know, covers, yeah, first issue and stuff.
I mean, it's
issue three, super... issue four, those are the numbers that I want to see, you know.
I mean, the six covers with the six characters, it's not like Transformers where they just basically, each cover is just a random image or something, you know. This is, there are six characters and one of each of them is on each of the covers, you know.
Yeah.
And by the way, I say this with absolutely no judgment, and as far as like merchandising goes, this is the prime example of knowing your audience and knowing how to get the cash out of them. No judgment here.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah,
just
yeah,
like
yeah.
Gambit, right?
No,
just
no,
like
but, okay. Speaking of people trying to get cash out of people, to move on from ponies.
Oh, I can talk ponies all day.
Yeah,
come
we know.
So
you
the last
the review comes out next month.
The last bit of news I got here, which is not from NYCC, is the news that Stan Lee Media is trying to sue Marvel Comics for ownership of the characters Stan Lee created.
Oh, I forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's going to go well.
Yeah. But it's not actually Stan Lee, though. It's just...
It's his old company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's our last bit of news. What about Spider-Man? What about...
Oh, sorry. Did I skip over that?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was that's right. I felt I'd left out something. I was going down my list of Marvel things, and I saw I'd put that in the middle, and then I was like, no,
I got
that
you
to...
too excited about Coulson.
Got to save that to the end. You did, yeah. You got me saving Coulson to the end, and then I was like, oh, wait, no, I'm supposed to be saving that for the end. Okay, so, yeah, that's going to go well with Stan Lee. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah,
so then
I mean,
the other bit, which is probably the news we were all waiting on, specifically us that we were waiting to hear about, which is the final, at last, I mean, no great surprise after the additional hints that were added to the Superior teaser last week as far as creative team went, but it has been confirmed that we can expect the Superior Spider-Man in January.
And all indications from Dan Slott is that it's going to be messed up.
It is not Peter Parker in the costume.
It's not.
It's the thing we know. Now, the trick is like, oh, you want Spider-Man and Mary Jane back together again? Fine, they're back together again. Spider-Man's not Peter Parker, though. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm almost a little scared of Slott right now because he is taking some sadistic pleasure.
I know,
some
right?
of the things he's doing.
Beyond hope that it turns out that it's Miles Morales from the Amazing.
Well,
it's,
we've seen an image of the second issue cover, and it's Spidey, and he's kissing Mary Jane, so the mask's up, and he's not black underneath it. So.
Yeah, and that's exactly where people went first. So now people are like,
Miles,
well, is it Kane? Is
they
it?
Said
an...
he has claws.
Which Kane does, but Kane only has, like, one claw per arm. Not
that's
like,
so...
not like sharp fingers.
Maybe it's Miguel O'Hara, the Spidey 2099.
Well, and someone
buy like 50 copies of that.
My shop owner did make that connection because he did say that Miguel had those same.
Yeah,
you
he's
know.
Got like little claws on his hands.
Yeah,
so that's
got
like,
them there.
Wow. Dude, I'd buy like 50 copies if it was that.
I mean,
and then like Dan Ketch would get stars.
Oh God! Oh my God! I swear, I am gonna try to North Carolina and beat you with a stick.
Beat me with a chain, you mean?
Oh my God! Anyway, so.
Well, yeah, so that's happening. That's big. That is interesting. And I mean, they've described it as dark and weird. Now, the internet has, of course, morphed that into grim and gritty in a very short order.
And that's not what Slott said.
Yeah. And I mean, I would be, you know, I'd be kind of surprised, honestly, if this setup stuck around for any great length of time. It reminds me of the last time they relaunched Spider-Man from number one, in which a new character put on the Spider-Man costume, and it lasted two issues before Spidey had the suit on again.
What was that? The the John Byrne thing?
Yeah, the John Byrne hired.
But did I? Someone suggested that Peter should die.
Shut up. Just keep your mouth shut.
And that seems like that could be possible now.
There's a Penny Arcade strip about that. From way back when. It's nothing to do with this, but there was one time.
I value other people's opinions. I just don't value that opinion.
That is a quote of the week right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh. World right there.
I am going to use that on superhero time tomorrow.
I have pretty much got complete faith in Slot to pull this.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that's the whole deal. It's like, if anybody can do it, it's going to be Slot. And, you know, I mean, like I said, he's kind of scaring me a little bit because he has really embraced this, like, dark god thing where he is, you know, basically just flipping the table on the Spider-Man world. And I'm kind of excited. I mean, if he's that fired up about it and that confident about it, it's bound to be good, you know. So it'll be good reading no matter what happens. So,
yeah.
Very excited.
God, that's a ton of news.
I mean,
yeah, okay, so I believe that is all.
That has taken up like half the show at this point. Yeah. So, or almost. So, all right, well, let's...
So, like, for our recommendations, we like Comet. That's a show. Thanks.
Right. No, we've got 50 minutes, so, you know, we just need to make sure we keep it short because we've got a lot to talk about with the end of the show. We're going to talk about the Batman issue 13, the beginning of Death of the Family. I have to say that slowly so that I don't... say the wrong one, because this
don't,
is a...
Don't say Death in the Family.
Right, because that was a different thing.
Yes.
So
we don't think Robin's going to die at all in this story, really. I mean, no.
No. Which one? Well, I guess...
take.
Which of the two?
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah. Or Tim three. Because Tim's not Robin and was never
like,
Robin.
You know, yeah, Jason never... Todd's not going to get beat to death with a crowbar again.
Again.
I mean,
Tim was only Batman's sidekick and dressed like Robin and had Robin in his name, but I mean, he was never actually Robin.
Right.
You know?
He was never Robin.
Totally this is totally worth the internet going up in arms about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Yep.
Anyway. So, all right. So, Chris Triplett then. What do you got to go?
I'm just going to do two quick little hits on Wolverine and the X-Men number 17 and number 18. I don't know how. I got behind in Wolverine and the X-Men a couple issues, and I should have made number 17 my recommendation last week because it's so freaking awesome. And I feel like I needed to just do a quick little hit on it just because it was so awesome.
So, so the fact that we're like short on time makes you want to add – things to recommend to this week.
It's quick, trust me.
Okay.
It's the issue that Mike Alred did the art for, which if you guys are familiar with him, he's a madman, and he did the Ecstatics, which was I never read Ecstatics, but it seems like it was pretty popular back when did it come out, 2000s maybe?
Yeah, around the turn of the century, yeah, or thereabouts.
Yeah, and through
that,
you know,
X-Force for a while.
Yeah, and he just, his art style with, like, you know, the X-Force characters was just so strange. It just, his art style with Marvel Comics is just strange, but I can't look away from it. I mean, that's how much I like it. It's like you look at it and you're like, oh, God. But what's so great, the reason he comes in and does this issue is this is basically the secret origin of Goop. Or not Goop, I'm sorry, Doop. I don't know why it's Goop. Who has been in Wolverine the X-Men, but he's... It's like, why did Wolverine ask this guy to join the X-Men? He doesn't do anything but sleep and eat. In every issue of Wolverine X-Men, he does nothing. So in this issue, you find out why he called him there. And it turns out he is Wolverine's secret weapon.
Mm-hmm.
He is the guy that makes sure that nothing comes to the school to cause problems. And when I mean things that are going to cause problems, I mean just random crazy things. I mean like a Nazi team of bowlers. What the hell?
The League of Nazi Bowlers.
The League of Nazi Bowlers, exactly. How about robots from a dimension in which he has to fight them off with no other than Howard the Duck and a gun that shoots me? What the hell?
Whoa.
And how about this? Apparently he's really good with the ladies because everybody likes it. And I'm not talking about just anybody. I'm talking about She-Hulk.
Oh.
I'm talking about Tigra. I'm talking about Warbird, which you guys probably don't know who that is, but that's okay.
I think I know who that is.
But, I mean, it's an awesome issue, and the art's great, and it's just one of those crazy off-the-wall issues in which he's always been there in the background doing nothing. I mean, he even has a duel with the devil you know, where the play on the, you know, the fiddle playing with the devil, except for it's like playing a guitar, like they're playing their axes, and it's just so great. He's like, "Ha, it'll be a cold day in hell before anyone can beat that solo," says the devil. "The souls of those kids are mine, good as mine." In which he starts playing, and the devil says, "Wait, what are you? No, no, not the funk."
Wow.
It's excellent. I mean, if you're going to buy one issue Wolverine the X-Men, it's this. It even has a great cover in which Wolverine and Dupe is dressed together, like dressed up like in the same costume on the cover, in which everything Dupe says, you can't make a sense out of it. It's just gibberish. And all he says is something like a long sentence, and Wolverine says, "You said it, bub." So, yes, excellent. My God, why did I not read this? That should have been my recommendation for last week. But moving on. Wolverine the X-Men number 18 was also really good. I think it's going to be like the last AVX kind of crossover issue. And the only reason I really mention it is because big stuff happens in the issue.
Page better not be true.
Oh, my God. Have you been keeping up with it? Have you been reading it?
Yeah, generally speaking, I've been keeping up on it, yeah.
You've been liking it? Because I love this book. This is such a fun book. And just, yeah, like you were saying, the last page. It must be like the king of the last pages this week or something, because, dude, that last page, something bad happens. Things are not going to be the same. I do really like that we get kind of like a little section where it's going on at the same time as the end of AVX, in which, you know, Professor X, you know, he dies. You know, spoilers for AVX. Oh,
what? What?
But, like, what's cool is, like, before he dies, he actually tells Logan that no matter what he does, no matter what happens, never let that school close. And it's really cool because he kind of, you know, he says that, you know, one day some of those kids that you're, you know, teaching there, they may be the ones that wind up saving us all. And it's just a cool little moment, like a cool little goodbye to Professor X. And I just love this book. I hope this book isn't going away. I know you said it's not canceled.
No,
but I don't
know.
Aaron moving over to what's he doing? He's doing Thor, and isn't he doing like another book?
He's doing Thor, and right now he's doing Wolverine and Hulk, and he's going to be doing Thor and Wolverine. I don't know if he's doing anything else for Marvel. Yeah, but he's co-writing AVX as well. I mean, so it's not like he's not got room in the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they don't. I mean, because like. They're making the focus of the X-Men going to be that new Bendis book or something. No, forget that book. This is the X-Men book. This book is excellent. So, yeah.
Excellent.
I'm good.
It's excellent.
It's excellent. I'm done.
Okay. Nicole.
All right. My two quick reviews or recommendations. The first one I'm going to do is Marvel Universe versus the Avengers. Now, if you're a fan of zombies, as I am, or any kind of
take a drink,
like...
drink.
God, yes.
They didn't have turtles to talk about.
No, that's probably next week, right?
No, wait. It's the last week that they come out. Oh. It's always the last week the turtles come out. Sorry. So anyways, yeah, this is basically, if you're a fan of anything... any kind of hero in the Marvel Universe, you'll probably see him in this issue alone, either in the background or in the story. But basically, it's Hawkeye's story in this first one. So for all you Hawkeye fans out there, it's basically him setting up the story about this new disease that's on Manhattan Island, and they might have to bomb it or something. So
might bomb it or something, I guess.
Or something, you know. They're talking about we don't want to bomb it, that we're going to do something else, try to find a cure. So, of course, they got all the geniuses together. They got Hank Pym and Beast and Black Panther all together trying to figure out how to control this disease. So they have that. And then everyone else is just going crazy. But there's a few of them that are immune to this disease. And one, like I said, Hawkeye's one of them, so he's the one that's telling the story. And basically, it's a good setup to see a bunch of your characters go crazy. So, but there is one person at the very end, who I won't say who it is, who has the cure. But they're going to have to do some work for him, it looks like. So, yeah, that's a quick little review if you like zombie stories. There you go. Yeah. So I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. So I'll probably be reading. It's only only 4 issues. So we'll see how. There's a lot of them that got a lot of people that got killed in this issue that I'm surprised. So I'm like, okay, this is not going into the continuity of the rest of the universe, but. Go ahead. My next little recommendation is Batgirl because it goes along with the death of the family. If you have been reading Batgirl since the relaunch, since the new number one, the story at the very end, it all comes to the conclusion as, here's a little spoiler alert, all the 3 enemies that she's basically have made show up at the end of the book. But it does conclude, well, somewhat conclude, who Nightfall is. Our last issue shows her being pretty much taken down by Nightfall. Let me just tell you this. Batgirl has one of the best immune systems I know. She knows how to get up from a fight, no matter how close she is to death, pretty well. So, but, yeah, I'm still enjoying Batgirl. But I want to see what happens when they get all her enemies together. So, really quick, there you go.
Nice.
I read that one, and I'm not entirely clear how it deserves a big Joker face on the front of it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, that's the thing. The only mention of the Joker is at the very end.
Yeah, allegedly this is the prologue to Death of the Family, and I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much just the conclusion, the last issue story there, guys. You're kind of cheating on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. But I think it's cool how they done the issues like that. But, yeah, I agree. It's the conclusion of Nightfall. And then
it's like, we need to sell more copies of this. Let's put this on the cover.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. Really, really.
So, like, I'm enjoying Batgirl. I always had. So, like I said, it's the conclusion of Nightfall, which is good. And you get to hear her Nightfall's story. But,
I like how at the end of she's basically got her own kind of like supervillain team that's plotting against her.
It's yeah. Yeah. You know?
She has her Sinister 3 or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, I like that. Because I totally forgot about Gretel. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about her.
Yeah.
But,
awesome.
But yeah, because I remember Mirror. Because of course he was the first one when it launched. I like Mirror. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how those 3 come together. Or if they're going to team up with the Joker, since it is, like, the whole Joker thing going on. So.
Or will that just be something we'll come back to after the actual tie-in to Death of the
Family? Probably. Next story. I bet that's, like, teaser for, like, the next story. And, oh, it's just going to be Joker for, what, like, the next 3 or 4 months?
Yeah.
There. I don't even think it's all in Batgirl for that length of time.
Let's see. Yeah. It's in Batgirl through January.
Is it? Fair enough then.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying Batgirl. Of course, Gail Simone always does a good job in my opinion, so. And that's it for me.
Awesome.
Really quick.
Very quick. Very nice. Okay. So, I am going to talk about, in more, I guess, mainstream, maybe. I don't know. I guess it's not really. Uncanny Avengers. This is the book that kind of had us scratching our heads for a couple of reasons. One, of course, it's the sort of post-AVX book. And the other thing was we're not really sure what's uncanny about this Avengers team since...
There's X-Men on it!
Yeah, there's X-Men on every Avengers team.
X-Men that were... Avengers.
But Wolverine's on it! I mean, come on, that's uncanny!
Wolverine's an Avenger.
Basically, it seems to be it's because Havoc is the leader.
Dear God, people, Scarlet Witch is on
it. He's the only person that wasn't an Avenger at some point, isn't he, like, on this team?
I think Rogue's like an Avengers villain, I think, at one point.
Yeah, well, she stole all the Avengers. My shop owner was telling me about, like, the one time that she, like, was an Avenger when she took all the Avengers powers or something. But
she fought the Avengers?
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's that. But that's okay, because then you open up the first page, and a dude's having his brain partially cut out.
Woo, brain! Yeah.
And it's, like...
Pretty graphic.
Very graphic.
Yeah, some brains right there.
Although the Undertaker at my shop assured me that it doesn't look anywhere as clean as that. So,
oh, I would imagine not. It looked very clean. He just like neatly opened up the front of his head and just lifted half the brain out and then, mm-hmm. yeah.
Put a thing in there. But yeah, I mean, it is that sequence. But behind that is this person droning on about races and culture and endangered mutants and hatred and all of these things. And you're like, that sounds familiar. I wonder why. And, you know, there's a part of this which is the memorial for Xavier. There's a conversation here between Havoc and Scott. So very much the core sort of things that you would expect out of it. You know, Steve Rogers recruiting Havoc because he's not busy.
Dude, there is still a comic called X Factor, and Peter David does still write it.
Is
Don't
Havoc,
say he's not busy.
He's not in X Factor.
He's not in it, though.
I thought he was.
No.
Really?
I think he hung about with them for a bit, but he's not like a member of the cast or anything.
Like, the star is Multiple Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I just thought Alex Summers was there at some point.
I'm sure he was there at some point. Anyway. Yeah. I'm sure he was.
But yeah, I mean, there's a mini little action sequence involving the person that was having part of their brain cut out.
It was Avalanche. It's not a spoiler.
Avalanche. Oh, my God.
Avalanche, who you may remember from the X-Men cartoon series.
But then you get to the end of this whole deal, and I'm not going to spoil it, because you just have to see it.
I know, right?
To believe it. It is the wackiest, like, of everything that this book started, where this book ends, the first issue of it,
yes.
It's just going to leave you, like turning the previous page to the last, so the previous to the last, like, somewhere in between there, it's like your brain is exploded. It's like your brain came out of your head.
All I can say is I was reading this and I was thinking, you know, this is okay, but I don't know if I want to get the second issue. I mean, the art's nice, and nothing's really happening yet. They haven't gotten it started yet.
And then
I get to
the last three pages, really. The last three pages are the three pages that just, like, the top of the third to the last page where you're like, oh, shit. And then the last page where you're like, WTF.
I get to that last page, and I was like, how can I not get the next issue?
I mean, wow. Shit. Do yourself a favor. Get this book. Read it all the way to the end. Just...
Hey, Brian Kilby, if you're hearing this, you need to read Uncanny Avengers. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, just for the shock and awe of the last page. Like, don't spoil yourself.
I'm not spoiling nothing. I'm just saying.
But I'm saying, don't spoil yourself either. Don't, like, just flip to the last page. Read the whole thing.
Read it. Don't jump to the last page.
Oh, man.
I just can't get a handle on Uncanny Avengers, though.
No, I mean, it does kind of seem odd and all over the place. I'm hoping it...
No, and not even internal to the thing. I just can't get a handle on the concept. Because, like, it's the first Marvel Now book out of the gate after... AVX, you know.
Right.
And it's the one that's about Avengers and X-Men together. So it's really being presented as the headliner thing, you know. This is
like the flagship Avengers book or something?
Yeah, yeah. It's being presented essentially as the flagship Avengers book. It's the new thing to launch the new direction for the Avengers and the Marvel Universe in general and their two core teams. And a month later, Jonathan freaking Hickman's going to come bust your ass down with a bi-monthly Avengers title that can't be anything but awesome. And I'm like, way to undercut your sale.
It's a little bit too much Avengers, you know? That's kind of the problem.
Yeah, it's a little Avengers. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you look at that cover, and really the cover is who's in this issue. So maybe it's a little misleading. Like, maybe there's going to be more. It's just not there yet.
You know,
so I don't know.
Really disappointing as well about Uncanny Avengers is that every single new costume in it is shit.
Yeah.
I hate Havoc's costume. I mean,
Havoc's costume is a friggin' mess. Way to misunderstand the key elements of that. Captain America's new movie-inspired redesign of his costume completely misses the point of why costumes have to be redesigned for films and then necessarily do not work when taken back to the page. Mm-hmm. Scarlet Witch appears to be wearing a trench coat, And come on, guys, don't get rid of Thor's new look. It's only been knocking around for a couple of years. I mean, for goodness sakes, all of Marvel's other media properties just got through redesigning their Thors so that they looked like the awesome Oliver Coipel Straczynski Thor design. Superhero Squad even did it. Earth's Mightiest Heroes did it. He's got it. His look in the films is essentially that, but a bit more swirly. Even Superhero Squad redesigned their Thor so he looked like Olivier Coipel's armored Thor.
Because it's awesome.
Thor look, he looks a little like a homeless man. He really does. It's every costume is it's not even, there are no lateral moves. They're all terrible.
It'd be nice if this is just for Uncanny Avengers and then you get to like Jason Aaron's Thor and the regular Thor and everybody like, yeah, we're just ignoring Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah. I gotta try and make those X-Men guys look good, so I'm dressing down over in that book.
Yeah, really.
Oh, and one thing that I do really like in this book was the, no mutant shall escape the anger of my living wind. And the wind says, I live to attack.
That was hilarious. It was like, that shouldn't be funny, but it's really funny, and I don't know why.
It's fucking funny, yeah.
Oh. Okay. All right, Christopher Feely, go, sir.
Y'all right. Well, I'm going to recommend y'all this week Red She-Hulk, number 58. Where were the other 57 issues, you might ask me? That's okay. They were just Red Hulk. You don't need to read those. Yeah, in a rather strange move for Marvel now, where everything is surrounded by brand new number ones, Marvel have decided that obviously the best way to launch a new book, a new female-led book, no less, is to just have her pick up the numbering of a previous book starring a character nobody really likes and which never sold very well. After Jeff Loeb stopped, wanking everybody off.
That's just, okay.
Yeah.
Hey,
has Marvel been talking to DC? This is like a DC.
Really, yeah. No, the writer is the same, actually. I mean, that's part of the reason why it hasn't changed, is the fact that it is actually still the same writer. It is, and the writer is, my desire to try and support books that are female-led, like we were talking about Captain Marvel era a week or two ago, and the fact that this is being written by Jeff Parker are the reasons I've decided to pick this issue up and give the first issue a try. Jeff Parker, you will remember, was the writer of Agents of Atlas, which I was never done praising. And he was also the writer of Thunderbolts, which has just recently turned into Dark Avengers. And really, I rate him on the same level as your Christos Gages, your Fred Van Lentes, and your Dan Slotts. But he's just not had the big break onto a major book like guys like Gage and Slot, a book that has had the joy of having Avengers or X-Men or Spider-Man in the title of it to really get him out there. Because I keep glancing at Hulk and Thunderbolts and thinking, seems ready to do. But I never actually get around to buying them. So I decided to give this one a go. The art on this one is by Carlos, Pagulian?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Carlo Pagulian.
Gesundheit.
And Wellington Albs are the pencilers with Val Staples on the covers. And the basic plot is that the military is deciding to genetically engineer itself super soldiers. That's been going around for a while. But it's superhumans who are genetically engineered specifically by the military to be soldiers, and they're not just like Captain America style. They have all sorts of strength and flight and types of powers like that. And Betty Ross, being the daughter of a rather hard-nosed military man herself, knows how terrible an idea this is, and basically takes it upon herself to ensure that this does not happen. And that is more of a mission statement than Captain Marvel has had in four issues.
That
so it's immediately
true.
Got that going for it. Very nice art from Pagulian and Welbs. Really enjoyed the art on this. And it's also got Machine Man in it. So there's another strike in its favor.
It's got who? What?
Machine Man, X-51. My robot
brain
needs...
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. there's a reaction. Yeah, so wow. She kicks a little ass. She basically shows up all the super military superhumans in front of the investors who have arrived to witness their display to just demonstrate how bad of an idea it is. And we have Machine Man's files on her and the Red Hulk and their history interspersed without the story to cement one particular fact about her character. And by her character, I mean like her actual psychological character, her persona. And I'm not going to spoil this bit, because, and just like something that she... Pardon me.
Bless you.
Something that she doesn't do. And then, in a rather shocking cliffhanger at the end of the book, it's just completely silent and sudden and violent, she does that thing, and it made me go, right, I'll come back for the next one of these then and see where this goes.
So this is pretty high praise, it sounds like. It sounds like you really liked it.
It's nothing groundbreaking, you know. It's like the idea that the military is trying to make super soldiers is certainly nothing new for the Marvel Universe. But being able to, frankly, taking a retarded character concept like Red She-Hulk is Betty Banner and actually managing to attach some level of direction to it that is based, that is rooted in the character's history and grants her like a mission statement and a direction to take her in, are all steps in the right direction. It's nothing groundbreaking. It's not laugh out loud funny or anything. There's a misstep or two here, like whenever towards the end here, when she sneaks inside a Project Echelon is the name of the government organization that's doing all of this. She sneaks inside a facility, you know, and there's a big superhuman test subject they've got in there who is causing trouble, you know, and I'm like, oh, they gotta go the sexual assault with it because it's a woman, and I'm like, that's kind of a misstep, you know, you don't need to do that. But the dude gets what's coming to him, and that's all part of the, it's all part of this rather surprising cliffhanger. I mean, the cliffhanger is like, it's actually something that's kind of one of those things that's intrinsically bound up in Hulk lore and what Marvel has always attempted to claim up until very recently. Hulks never do. But this character never has before, and it just comes so coldly and so suddenly and so shockingly that it just sort of knocked me for a loop and made me go, yeah, okay, you know what, that's one down. Yeah, I'll give another one a go. So I'm not willing to pass judgment on the whole of the concept right now, but it's got itself a solid direction rooted in the character's history and a surprising enough cliffhanger surprise ending that makes me want to come back and see at least what happens next, and Machine Man.
Machine Man is never a bad thing. Is there an in-comic reason why Red Hulk's not in it, or is it just, hey, this book ain't selling like it used to, let's fix it up?
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine this is going to pull in any new massive new numbers of readers. I would think it's because, well, miraculously enough, we do seem to have been spared Red Hulk number one, which seemed almost like a certainty in the face of the change this book underwent and all the new number ones that were coming, but it seems to be because he's going to be busy with the Thunderbolts, which we talked about last week, was the series, that he's not doing this anymore. So that's Red Hulk, and then there's one other book I'm going to talk very quickly about this week, and Nicole read this one as well, which was this one shot from Image called Halloween Eve, which is by Brandon Montclair and with art by Amy Reader. Now, I got this purely for Amy Reader's art, because I felt you could short shrift on Batman doing stuff that really didn't serve her art well, but there were times in the... Batwoman.
You mean Batwoman, yeah, okay.
Yes, I did mean Batwoman. Yes, but there were times when I was reading her issues of Batwoman where there were some scenes where I thought, you see, that looks really good, but this bit over here doesn't. It's like, this doesn't seem like a good match for her, so I wanted to buy the book to check out something else by her inner element. Now, what I didn't know about this book was it was actually Kickstarter funded.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it was a successfully Kickstarter-funded comic, and I bought it for the art. Had I realized that the writer was the writer of Fear Itself, Fearsome Four, I would probably have thought twice. And that was borne out when I then proceeded to read the one-shot, which is lovely art, absolutely, but it is part Christmas Carol, part Wizard of Oz.
I was going to say, it's basically a ripoff of Christmas Carol, but Halloween style.
Yeah, but it seems to feel like it's more the Wizard of Oz because the cover image, it makes no bones about it. The illusions are obvious, and the cover is right there. The central character is Eve, who is a seamstress and clerk at a costume store who just hates Halloween so darn much.
So she works at a costume store.
Yeah, yeah, that's what you do. I mean, it's not like, you know, you can't escape Christmas. So Scrooge, you know, legitimately had issues with not being able to get away from it. You don't work at a costume store, you're probably not going to be too bothered by Halloween happening around you. But she hates Halloween, and she's left cleaning the store up on her own at the end of the day before Halloween. She's left cleaning the store on her own the day before Halloween, and then the costumes start coming to life, and she gets sucked away into a Halloween land very briefly, and then she learns her lesson and comes out the other side, and you there, boy, what day is this? Today, sir? Why, it's Halloween day. Not really, but it might as well.
Basically.
Yeah. It's very... on the nose.
Give me the largest pumpkin at the market. And
yeah.
Sorry, I had to.
Large is me, sir. Oh boy. Is it? But it's all just there's no room for it to breathe at all. It's only a 40 something page one shot. To be fair, I mean, it's $4 40 something page. So the value is there, and you strip the words away, and you're getting 40-some pages of really, really nice Amy Reader art, where she's actually got room to flex her creative muscle and do her own thing. Like, it's worth buying for that. But do not expect anything out of the story. It wants to believe that it sets up a character and then sends them through an arc in which we learn why she hates Halloween and then comes to terms with it. But we do not at any point. No actual rationale is given for her attitude. No experiences are presented to justify why she would stop hating Halloween afterwards. It's not like it even gets scared out of her. It's just like, it's all the beats of A Christmas Carol and Alice in Wonderland without any of the actual, like, emotion or rationale behind them, you know? It's like she goes through a thing where she talks about costumes and disguising who you are and wearing your heart on your sleeve, and I'm like, you don't do any of that!
Exactly.
How can you hate it? It's like there's very little sense in the story. It just plucks the major storytelling beats of A Wizard of Oz and A Christmas Carol out of it and throws them together without really understanding why those stories work. And it thinks they can just rip them off and do them and that it'll work out the same way, and it doesn't.
The art's really, like you said, the art was really good.
The art is great. You know,
especially the devil looks great.
Yeah. But... yeah, I would recommend checking it out for the art alone, but do not go in expecting anything from the story. It's pretty nice all ages, though. You could give it to a kid, which is nice. And it's a simple enough story that a kid wouldn't have any trouble following it, but the kid will be going like, Mommy, why did she hate Halloween? I don't feel the inherent narrative of this piece of...
I want to hear a 5-year-old say that, too. That would be awesome.
I think your kid is actually a little smarter than this story wants to give its readers credit for. It doesn't get why the stories it's riffing on actually had any kind of resolution or solution. But the art's very, very nice, so you could at least check it out for that.
Sweet.
Nothing.
All right. So let's see. We are at how much time do we have?
I think like 15. Checking the time.
20. Less than 20 minutes. All right. That's fine. That gives us plenty of time to talk about this in detail. And maybe even have a little bit left for error. We'll see.
Does everybody get their Joker?
Does everybody have their Joker? Right. Okay. So I guess we should probably preface. Preface.
I don't care.
Like his face.
Yes. Why does the Joker have his face off? Well, if you didn't read Detective Comics, when it first started back up, that was like the first thing that happened. Triplett talked about it on the show.
Yeah, like the first issue was excellent, and the rest of the issues not so bad.
Sucked, yeah. For some reason, like, one of the biggest changes to the Joker in the whole New 52 happened in the first issue of a storyline that had nothing to do with that, and then, like, went completely somewhere else, and then the Joker disappeared.
You know what I was thinking they should have done? They should have made this as like a full mask, you know, the cover. Like, in half. You could take... and you could have it for Halloween, and everybody could have Joker faces.
It should have been polybagged like comics from the 90s.
Yeah, it had a foil cover.
You pull this cheesy little rubber mask out, and people will
wear
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And everyone could have been ready for Halloween.
Exactly,
okay. There you go.
So, but anyway, yes, the Joker had his face cut off, and then it ended up locked up at GCPD. And, I mean, by cut off, I mean, like, he had it done, like, surgically removed.
Like, face off.
Like, face off.
Yeah. I'm like, so you had his face cut off only to come back and belt it back on.
Right.
I'm assuming there is more to it.
To let you know, like, he did this on purpose. He wanted to have this done. This was not done to him.
Right. He wanted to have it done.
He did want
it
to have, yeah. So
he had Dollmaker do it to him.
Yeah.
So it's now a year later. And the Joker has been completely AWOL this whole time. So the story starts out with a conversation between Bullock and Gordon, talking about Bullock's going on about how there's all of these like omens where like there was a lion or a tiger cub born at the zoo with two heads, and there was the rivers have started to overflow, so they're flowing backwards, you know. So
you know what's sad is I'm just like, I'm so glad they did not show that two-headed cub. I'm like, thank goodness.
Get to the end of the comic.
Yeah,
like,
hang on. Well, hold your horses.
You don't want to see that, but damn, this first page is creepy. A van pulling into Gotham.
Yeah, meanwhile.
Talking about omens of this horrible things happening. That's kind of a creepy way to start a comic.
Yeah, as the van pulls in. Creepy would be the overall tone I would give to this entire comic.
Yeah, for sure.
But we learn that part of what's going on is that I guess there's been a sort of a contest to hide the commissioner's cigarettes and some sort of prize or something. I didn't follow that too much. Cause
he's got, like, hiding places for his cigarettes. He swore he'd quit, so he's hiding them, and he basically, you know, told all the cops, yeah, if you can find my hiding places, you know, there's, like, something, some sort of prize or something. He's finding notes.
Yeah.
Like, in this issue, Fallon says, you know, another one about, another one down. Sorry, Commish. You know?
Yeah. So, so they go back in to the building. And we see the person getting out of this van, and it's raining, of course, and there's a conversation that he has with some of his officers as they're coming back in about cigarettes. And then the lights go out. And then the generators come back on, so it's like dim lighting. And you see across the room a figure just standing in the doorway, soaking wet, and his face is in shadow. And the commissioner knows who it is right away. As all the lights go out yet again, and there's this beautiful sequence of events where it's the Joker, and you can pretty much tell, and he starts to tell, like, these jokes as the commissioner's, like, with a flashlight, desperately trying to see around the room. And as he's moving around the room, you can hear the Joker coming up to someone, starting a joke, breaking their neck, and then moving on. It's just a creepy ass scene, let me tell you that.
Yeah, you get like these people, you don't see these people. This is like it's all, you know, darkness, and they'll be like, "No, please stay away." And he'll be like, "You've heard it." Oh, okay. Crack. What
yeah.
And then the commish finds him, and there's like a dead body, you know, on the ground.
I mean,
they did such a great job with these two pages. I mean,
oh man.
Like, you don't see anything, but you have like that fear, like you're in that room with them.
Yeah, I mean, between, you know, Capullo's art on this is just insane. So you go to the next page, it's full light shot after, I guess, the commission got knocked down or something. But basically, Batman's there, and the Joker broke in, kills pretty much everybody on that floor. And
except for Gordon,
left Gordon alive. And took his face back.
You got this great little comment here. It's like, you know, what did he say, Jim? He told a joke. Oh God, Batman! He told a joke.
Yeah. So the next scene is sort of the bringing the Bat family back together as Bruce talks about how he's been looking for the Joker this whole year, but no sign of him. He's sort of warning everybody, although he sort of left Barbara out of the loop, expecting Gordon to tell her, but she found out through them anyway. Which seemed kind
of... That was weird.
It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But as they're sort of discussing this and discussing the next move, an image of a person in Joker makeup appears, obviously reading from a cue card, and his arms are being played by the Joker. Which is
that is such a great page. I mean, because you can see him just kind of slightly in the background.
Mm-hmm. And you can hear him. You can hear the dialogue. There's one shot in there where you can kind of see an eye back there and some other things.
And then you see his teeth, and it's done really well.
And so he gets the guy like reading this dialogue off the page where he's saying the mayor is gonna die at midnight. And the joke has been spoken, at the end, and then he's like, what is it he says here? He's dead as a baby smashed, baby bird smashed with a crowbar, midnight tonight.
Like, I don't need that image
sometimes like, oh. Kill me, and he pulls out a gun, and the guy says, please, and you just see the Joker laugh, and bang, and
Yeah.
So they kind of find out what they basically put together. What Batman puts together here is that the person in the video is John Claridge. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he's the son of Henry Claridge, who was one of the first person the Joker murdered in almost the same, in at least the same way that the murder for the mayor was being planned and the way that was done.
Was this the Joker fish toxin story? Is that what he's referencing?
I'm not sure. I think he definitely did that sort of thing where he threatened to kill, and the Joker, the laughing fish storyline. But
yeah,
I don't know if maybe this was the man
it,
who laughed.
It just made me think of it because like there was the guy in it, and I can't remember who it was that he had been poisoning it in. I think like in advance, and then like his cat like you know goes for him, and the cat like.
The cat was poisoned because
right.
Yeah.
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 But that's not this. Like,
yeah, because in this, he had like a 24-hour toxin.
I think I don't know if it's in like the original like Batman number one or not, but I think the man who laughs would be the most recent version of the story of like the Joker's first time in Gotham. So maybe it's in that. I'm not 100% sure.
Or it could just be something he's making up for this.
Nah, it sounds too familiar. Yeah. But at the same time, the first thing I thought of was The Dark Knight, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe.
With the Joker making a victim.
It might be The Man Who Laughs. The Man Who Laughs is a good, because I'd forgot about that. Yeah, it could be that.
But anyway, so this sends everybody swarming on the mayor's office. you see like an entire room full of officers and everybody's trying to protect him. They've tested like 5 liters of his blood. Really trying to make sure that he is going to be okay. And Batman's in an elevator shaft with projection screens, watching the monitors, looking at the heart rates and, really trying to go over it. And there's a little, moment in here where he's talking about, the commissioner asks if he can tell by his voice, and Batman's like, no, it doesn't show, and the commissioner's talking about fear. And, Batman starts to kind of think about things and putting pieces together while he has, like, this, downtime moment. And, the Joker made a mention of his calling card, and that, like, triggers Batman to go, oh, shit. as he goes running down the hall, and basically all of the officers are like puking and vomiting and dying. And you see
that's gruesome as hell when that dude's like puking on that other guy.
Oh, I know. So you come to find out it was like a binary toxin, and the mayor had made a point to mention that he had just had the floors cleaned. What you find out is that there was a binary toxin. Part of it was in the floor cleaner. The other part was on their clothing, I guess is what they said it was. But he didn't kill the mayor. He ended up killing all the officers. Yeah. And there was also 3 non-active elements that were in the compound that was chlorine, ethylene, and aspirin, which Bruce puts together right away as ACE or Ace Chemicals.
That's
like
a
Riddler moment.
In right there, man.
Oh, and did you mention that it makes them frown now? It doesn't make them smile.
Yeah, it doesn't make them smile. It made them all frown. So they're like in this tragic frown look. Yeah, it like reverts the look. But this last bit, when Batman comes into Acme Chemical, we see a figure of the Red Hood.
Ace Chemical.
I make that problem.
We'll forgive you.
Thank you.
That's okay.
I appreciate the forgiveness. Anyway, so the Joker's in what appears to be in a Red Hood getup and talking about, you know, going back to the beginning and where he had all started. And Batman figures out pretty quick that the person in this getup is not the Joker. And come to find out, it's as he's running up to the Red Hood, he gets smashed with an enormous hammer. Yeah.
That's gotta hurt, man. His back should have been broken with that look.
You would think, or head cracked open or something. And he gets knocked into a chemical vat without chemicals in it and then locked inside as it begins to fill with chemicals. But it turns out that it's Harley.
When I saw that, I just, in my mind, I was like, so why don't we just kill the guy? You know?
Why don't you just shoot him?
Oh,
yeah, why
don't
you just shoot him?
And she starts talking about how he's not the same, how he's changed, and he's not her Mr. J anymore. And
I feel so sorry for Harley.
Oh,
don't
man.
Feel sorry for Harley fucking Quinn!
I always feel sorry.
You are the
for her.
Worst kind of person.
How can you feel sorry
Harley
for Harley Quinn?
Quinn is a fucking murderous lunatic.
I mean, she is. I know she is, but she's still. I have.
No. I am sorry. You do not feel sorry for Harley Quinn.
Yes, you do.
No, she is so screwed up.
You gotta wait till the next story.
Even in that, it's like, no, you reap what you sow, all right?
Yeah.
We'll get there. So anyway, back at Wayne Manor, there's a knock at the door. There's a knock at the door, and Alfred opens the door to a two-headed cub.
I was so did not need to see.
Things you can't unsee.
Little guy.
And following behind the two-headed cub is the Joker with a hammer. Both being hammer.
With a face stapled or something
it's
back
like,
on.
It's like weird wired back on.
This is the first actual look we get at the Joker in the course of the story.
Yeah. And I love how they put like the title page at the end because it's knock knock as he's like about to hit Alfred over the head with a hammer.
Don't step anywhere. Stop me if you've heard this one.
All right. So if all of that wasn't creepy enough, all of that did not creep you out. I read this when it was way too dark and way too late last night, and I was creeped the fuck out. I don't even know how to go through this. I mean, other than to just explain what happens. I can give you some of the dialogue, but here's the gist. You see Harley coming into a room, and it's dark at first, and she's talking to the Joker. And she knows that she's wanting to see him, but the Joker's saying that he'll be right beside her as they're getting ready for the fun to begin. And that he's got that he saved, I guess, a piece or part or whatever for her. So she asks what he wants to do. He says, take off her clothes, which you're like, you know, fanboys are like, yay!
No, only idiots.
Okay, I'm sorry. Idiots are like, yay!
I'm sorry, do you mean like just like Harley Quinn fanboys, or do you mean like Harley Joker shippers?
I don't know. Whoever faps to Harley. Whoever those
okay,
people.
Well, that's all right then.
Whoever those.
Do you call those Quinnies, by the way?
Is it a Quinny?
Are they Quinnies?
Brinnies? I don't know. Anyway,
sorry.
All right.
All right. So she takes clothes off, and then he tosses her some clothes to put on. And you're starting to recognize these because this is like a suit and stuff. And he's talking about how much fun this is going to be. And she's talking about how there's like padding and stuff and
platform shoes
and everything. And he's like, yes, it's going to be just like she's going to look just like me. This is where this gets fucked up and dark and twisted. All right. Oh, and if you want to sleep at night, then don't listen to this part. Okay. Because now he starts talking about how, it's supposed to be that she's supposed to be a reflection of him. But there's one problem. Her face. See, it's just going to have to go.
It's still on her. He's like,
you're always my perfect little monster. He says he pulled a piece of his rib cage and stitched it back together with beautiful lives and smashed her normal brain on the ground and replaced it with a magnificently abnormal, that she's his creation and she needs for her to be perfect. And she's not understanding, which I think she is, but she doesn't want to, because I didn't want to either.
Yeah.
And, he's talking about how much fun she'll have. And she's asking if he'll still find her beautiful. And he's like, oh, one of the best lines. He's like, oh, Harley.
Brilliant.
When did I ever say I found you beautiful?
Fucking
fun. Oh, God.
That broke my heart.
Gets it. Why did it break your heart? It broke nothing. The Joker does not love Harley Quinn.
No.
The Joker has never loved Harley Quinn. Harley is a fucking instrument to the Joker.
Yeah.
And that, this is the funny thing. Joker and Harley shipping never, ever, ever bothered me for years and years. I just sort of chuckled at it until the Arkham Asylum video games happened, and they had that mega super retarded idea that Harley was pregnant at the end of the last one, and I was like,
I've never played the game.
In what fucking universe would the Joker put it in Harley?
No,
she would have to dress like Batman to get the Joker to put it in her, okay?
Yeah. And that just got really dark.
I mean, but
But that broke me. That broke me on the whole concept of Harley and Joker shipping. Because it's like some fucktarded video game making thought that was an idea that should be a thing.
What makes you think that they got together? Maybe she got it some other way.
You really think the Joker ever lets his guard down to let that happen to him?
This is all fascinating, but I want to finish this.
So anyway, I have severe issues with Harley Joker shipping now. And so to make it relevant again, the Snyder proving that he so gets how the relationship between the characters actually is and should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 1,000 times.
So let me give you the rest of the sequence here, kids, because this is where it gets nasty. She asks, would it hurt? And he's like, tremendously. More than anything has ever hurt in your life. The worst part is the eyes. They're going to get all dry and crusty without the lids. Got to start keeping eye drops handy. But right at the start, they'll stay nice and damp as your blood drips down over them, transforming the world around you red. Better close them now while you've got the chance.
I'm brilliant at that.
And she's like, no, I don't want it.
For Halloween. I don't want it.
And so the next shot is him coming at her with the razor and then shunk. And then there it is. It's done. And you see the red, and she's like saying she didn't feel anything, but he put the hood on her.
Turned her world red. Got you good with that one, didn't I?
Oh my God! And the title of this backup is called Tease. And I was just like, oh my God!
I love how it starts with her turning on the light, saying, "Mr. J, are you still there?" And it ends with her saying that too.
Yeah,
it's gone now. You know, we don't know where he's gone.
Yeah. Oh man. So good. What? So let's talk about this.
Yes, comic.
So let's talk about the main body of this real quick. We're out of time, but we'll take a little bit of time to talk about it anyway. So what do we think about this as like a setup for this like death of the family? I mean, the Joker's return. Is it what you would hoped out of the Joker coming back? I mean, really, this is like his first sort of big foray into the 52.
I liked it, but I'm actually disappointed in it.
Really? Because
I had all these ideas in my head, and they, you know, your ideas in your head are never going to be what they actually come up with. You know, never really. But, I mean, I liked it, and I'm interested as hell to see where they're going with it. But the fact that it's just the Joker comes back, and he just puts his face back on.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt and see if there was a reason for the face coming off.
Yeah.
But there's right now there's something missing in the flow of this. It's like Joker has face taken. I mean, you would expect that the reason to have your face taken off would be so that the Joker could come back after a year and turn out to have been somebody in disguise.
That's my idea. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
He's gone for a year, and Batman forgets about him. Everybody forgets about him. Then he comes back. Things start happening. Very Joker-specific things. He's back, but then the twist is you don't know who he is. You don't. He could be anybody at that point. You know, he was a real threat at that point. He has no face. He could be the guy down the street. He could be your neighbor.
It seems like.
But, I mean, Morrison did that already.
Yeah,
Morrison already did. The Joker comes back and is somebody else in disguise all along during Batman and Robin. So he couldn't really have done that again. So we're now left with this, like, what was the point of the faith?
It's like there was a point, and somewhere along the way they chickened out.
Well, no, I'm not. Maybe there might be something to it yet.
This didn't even happen in Batman.
Was there a point with the creative team and detective, and then they thought that, wow, you know, this is the Joker, we can't let you guys do it. It needs to be Scott's.
That's a great way to open it up to like get fans in, and then you can't do any of the rest of the things you wanted to do.
I mean, because,
I know. I mean, I would think that they would always have had that.
Detective Comics reeks of that. It started with that excellent. I mean, it was a good issue. It really was.
It was a bait and switch, though. I mean, let's talk about it.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened after. You had this great start. There's kind of like little hints. Oh, they still have his face in lockup. Like there's something going to come out of this. And then it never happens. Nothing ever happens. And then we get the announcement. Oh, yeah, that's going to continue with Scott Snyder's next story. His next arc.
I can't imagine that wasn't planned, to be honest. I mean, whenever you're writing high like this, you don't delegate the Joker to the secondary book.
But it wasn't riding high. That happened at the very beginning. It was the very first issue of the New 52.
Yeah.
So nobody had any idea whether Snyder's run on Batman was going to be good, whether
Batman,
or not.
Detective launched before Batman, didn't it?
Well, they launched the same month. I mean, it's the same time. But no one had any idea whether or not Scott Snyder was going to work on Batman, whether or not the Court of Owl things was going to be as popular as it was. So, you know, there was no indication that one way or the other. And it just seems like they, whatever it was that they were wanting to do in the interim with the Joker, they just abandoned to go with the Court of Owls thing. And now they're getting back around to using the Joker. So now the Joker just looks screwed up because he's got his face strapped on, but unless that's going to unfold in this, there's no indication of what happened in that interim time. And there's not even a lot of...
I'm going to say that some of that stuff's probably going to factor into this.
I hope so.
I think we're going to get something really good out of this. And I just don't know if, like you were talking about, the whole cutting his face thing off,
if that's going to be a bigger deal.
Can I just tell that something bad happens to Damian? I can't stand that kid.
No, Damian's awesome.
Damian's awesome.
I hate Damian. I do not care for Damian. He drives me nuts.
Damian's great. You're just wrong.
Read Batman and Robin. Read Batman Inc.
I wanted to drown the kid.
No.
Okay, go back. Read it again.
Try it again.
Bye.
This time liking Damian, and then you'll be fine.
Read the Dick Grayson stuff.
Definitely go back and read like the Dick Grayson Damian stuff. I mean, that was the best stuff.
Yeah,
Damian just drives me nuts.
Damien is so great. You're wrong.
That's the point.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a little asshole. That's why I like it.
He's supposed to be an arrogant little bastard.
I just want to take him over my knee and give him a few swats.
That's the point.
That's exactly it. Then you get it. See, you do like him.
I don't understand. Like him, he tries to be nuts.
He's
how to control his child.
I think
he wants to save the world, but he can't even train his own son to behave.
It's Batman. Yeah. Batman can't behave.
There's something wrong with me because I like Harley and I hate Damien.
Yeah, I know. You're sympathizing with the psychopathic murdering bitch.
Yeah.
And you're not feeling awesome about the awesome little ninja kid. All right? Awesome ninja kid is awesome. Sociopathic psychotic killer girl is evil. All right? Why would you feel sorry for her?
Because she's like...
Oh, because it's all the Joker's fault, isn't it? It's all his fault. He did it. It couldn't be that she's a killing, psychopathic, crazy person.
She just needs some help.
She was being controlled by man. That way, she doesn't have to take responsibility.
Yeah. So, to move on, just to get this done.
Anyway, yeah, I think, I mean.
How many of these stupid Batman books do I have to buy to keep getting this? Do I have to
this
just
one.
Get Scott Snyder?
Just this one. And Scott Snyder said that.
Yeah, I think you do just need to read
Scott Snyder said that,
too. Catwoman on there. It's like, I don't really know.
Scott Snyder basically.
There is no way that the Joker is actually going to be able to go and be in all of these
books. Catwoman
will probably read a newspaper about Bruce Wayne's butler got beat up. And that will be the height of the crossover, okay?
So, like, Red Hood and the Outlaws, is Jason Todd just going to get beat with a crowbar?
Probably. They'll just keep bringing that crowbar back.
If there's material to have the Joker be in it, like, that's probably the book that will justify it.
Well, and I think, I mean, it's from what Scott Snyder said, and I think what we can learn from what we saw in Court of Owls, that the other books add flavor, but they won't be so mandatory that you have to read them. You can read them. They will enhance the story, but they won't be required. I mean, we're not talking about Marvel here. You know, it's like Marvel where it's like you're going to be required, you know, pre-AVX to, like, read all of those side stories. You know, it seems like this is all going to take place. The main story is all going to take place in Batman, so...
Are they all going to have Joker covers, you think? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I doubt it. It's kind of expensive to do, and they don't want to waste all their money.
I mean,
is it
14? Is it 14?
I think all... I believe that all of the first parts have these covers, yes.
Yeah. And by prelude, they mean stamped on the back, right? So prelude to Death of the Family means stamped in the back. By the way, this is coming. So anyway, it is kind of creepy. Here's another creepy thing and an effect of, like, the New 52 is that the November is Batman, Batgirl, Catwoman, Suicide Squad, all number 14. December, Batman, Batman and Robin, Detective, Batgirl, Nightwing, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Suicide Squad, Teen Titans, all issue 15. So it's kind of, like, that's a little creepy, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I know why it is, but it's still kind of... It's not something you're used to seeing. You know, usually it's like when there's crossover events in the real world, it's always like, you know, 40 of one, 10 of the other, 306 of something else. So
I did notice that. That is weird. I mean, you know, it's just weird.
It's not what you're used to, right? You're used to, like, a title followed by a random number, you know, for the issue. And now it's, like,
It's like, you read Batman number 14, and then and next week look for Batgirl number 2. You know?
Right, exactly, you know. All right, well, we've gone a little bit over time, but that is okay. This is good stuff. Great news.
Talk about Harley Moore.
She's crazy. And the Joker doesn't love her.
He doesn't.
I know, that's why I feel sorry for her, because she's in love with the man, doesn't love her back.
How do you know she loves him that way, though? I mean,
no, that's it. No, she doesn't. It's not just that she loves him; it's that she legitimately believes that he loves her.
Right. Yeah.
That's some crazy shit. That's not just unrequited love. That's some straight up crazy bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's talking about cutting
mad
her...
Mad love is the ultimate expression of that, in which Harley displeases the Joker one too many times. He throws her out a window. She decides at the end of the story, that's it, I realize it, I see that now. She goes into her cell in Arkham, she's all bandaged up, and then there's a little flower sitting on the bed, and it says, "Get well soon, Jay." And she's like, "Oh, no, no, I actually still love him. Still a crazy bitch."
Yep.
That's an excellent comic. If you haven't read that, totally read that. Mm-hmm. And the animated episode's good, too.
It is. Wow. But the comic better.
Yeah, I like the comic better, too.
Okay, then. So much news. Thanks, Chris, for compiling all that and putting that together for us. Bravo on that. So anyway, we'll probably have the last little wrap up of stuff for next week of New York Comic Con and more things to come. So anyway, sorry again about not having video this week. Blame Skype. That's all I can say. Send them nasty letters, tweet them evil things, and tell them that you really wanted to watch this show, but you couldn't because of them.
Oh, I forgot something. No, Walking Dead's back tonight.
What? Walking Dead's back tonight.
Yeah, we
didn't get to talk about Arrow. Arrow was actually surprisingly good and way fucking dark.
I didn't watch it, but not because I didn't want to watch it, just because I didn't have time to watch it, because I figured I'll check the first episode out, but the reports seemed pretty good.
It was way darker than I expected.
It was all right.
It's a lot better than I thought.
Yeah.
It's better than Smallville.
I mean, there were check marks.
But then,
there were,
you know, being poked in the eye with a fork.
There were definite check marks. Like, okay, there's a shirtless shot. Check.
Don't say that's a bad thing.
I'm not. I'm just saying it's like there's a potentially evil guy with a British accent. Check. And
how about a Deathstroke mask?
Evil
episode.
Evil corporate. Yeah, okay, yeah, Deathstroke mask at the beginning of the episode. What was that about? You know, characters with names of characters in the comics, check. And potentially evil corporate guy, or very evil corporate guy with lots of money, check.
He's stealing money and he's giving it to poor people.
Right, and it definitely has, like, I thought about it for a minute, and I guess we're going to talk about it for just a real brief second. Sorry, folks, but I thought about it. It has a very Dark Knight trilogy sort of feel to it.
Felt like Green Arrow Begins, didn't
it? It did. Yeah. But then I thought about it, and I thought, wait a minute. Green Arrow is Batman.
I have to be an arrow.
But when you think about it, it's like, yeah.
Long and pointy.
Long and pointy.
Villains are a superstitious and cowardly lot, and they hate arrows. But when you think about it, it's like Green Arrow is Batman. I mean, he was based on Batman anyway. So it's kind of like, well, that doesn't make, wrong sense, I guess. I mean, it kind of fits. But this is definitely not Batman, where Batman is like, no killing. That isn't a problem for Green Arrow at all.
There's a few deaths in the first episode. You're like, okay.
Like in the first, there's the first little scene where he runs into some criminals and he's unmasked. This is not really a little bit of a spoiler, I guess. He's unmasked. He like chases one down, totally badass, dodging bullets and stuff, and grabs the guy in like the body bent back headlock thing.
I know, it's just like,
and the guy's like,
wait,
please let me go. He's like, no, no one can know my secret. Crack.
Yeah. This ain't your daddy's Green Arrow. No, he's cracking some necks.
Yeah, if you're thinking boxing club arrows and stuff, that is not this guy. But I'll give it props to the main actor. I mean, he's good. He had me totally believing that, like, dark, you know, brooding character, and then he could turn on, like, the Playboy thing. So, you know, which is what you're going to have to do with the series, so... It's interesting. There's a lot of side plots. There's a lot of
Nods, like the mention of Speedy.
Yeah, his sister's nickname is Speedy, and she's on drugs.
I heard that.
No! Yeah, his girlfriend's name goes by Miranda.
Laurel Lance.
And it turns out that's her middle name, because her first name's Diana.
Yeah, well, I knew about that.
But that's not something you know until like the very end of the episode. And also, he's got his buddy who goes by his first name that I can't remember until the very end.
Tommy,
who is Merlin, at the end, which you learn at the end as well. So it's just.
Which you learned in any of the previews.
Exactly.
Or any
if you,
of the
but that's of the course. Number one. That's the number one dumbassery moment from the thing. It's like, so, oh, look at that. Look, his best friend is the guy who will be his arch enemy.
But if
Smallville.
You. Well, but the thing is that if you. But following the story, you get a sense of that maybe at the end, but there's so many evil people in Starling City.
What's up with Starling City? What?
Well, I think some
that
producer
does not sound less stupid than Star City.
Yeah.
So the WB or CW or whatever is embarrassed by this because they don't call it Green Arrow and they don't call it Star City. So what's next?
Yeah. So I don't know, but anyway, it's
he's not Oliver Queen, you know. He's Bill King, you know. His name's Bill King.
Bill King, yes. Because that
that's
other name is way too lame.
Name for man.
Yeah. Oh man. So anyway, you should check it out. It's
masculine name like
all that said.
For the first episode, it actually caught my interest. I think I'll keep it on my DVR.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of unanswered questions. It seems as well. It's like, okay, he lived on this island for 5 years, and yet. It seems like he received a training, you know, especially since you see that Deathstroke mask. I don't know. It's interesting. Anyway, it's got
I would bet money that
watching.
Whatever their rendition of Deathstroke will be, it will be better than Michael Ironside with a steel plate welded over his eye.
Yeah, well, it'll have to be. Anyway, I'm sorry. We've gone way long, but you check out Arrow. Be sure to check that out on the CW. So check us out, Fanboy Versus. Hey, don't forget, we have an app. So if you have an Android phone, you can download the Fanboy Versus app. You can listen to our show on the go, wherever you are. If you got a lunch break and you want to listen to a fifth of our show, you can, like on a half hour. Take Fanboy Versus with you wherever you go. Just go to your Android market, do a search for Fanboy Versus, and you'll find our Fanboy Versus app. So...
Well, you could pay us. Like we would come over and we would just chat if you paid us.
I mean, if you paid me, yes. And I'm cheap, pretty cheap. So yeah, you could do that too. If you want us to come make an appearance at your con, you could do that for some unknown reason. If you would pay us, so you could do that.
If you want us to come make an appearance at your con, what is wrong with you?
I'm a lot of fun.
That's not true. We made an appearance.
Scott Snyder this year.
We'll
take JD Church.
We went to that Wilkesboro Library Con, sort of.
That's true.
I live in that town, and I didn't even go.
See, I was there via satellite. Anyway, I don't know why you would do that. But anyway, go to the website. FanboyVersus.com. Check us out on Twitter at FanboyVS. You can also, if you go to the website, you can get all of our Twitter feeds as well. So if you want to follow us individually on Twitter for some reason, you can listen to Chris McFeely yell at customers, which is hilarious.
Especially if it's raining outside.
I think the one from yesterday that was my favorite was murder, 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 get out, get out, get out, die. Die, die, or something like that.
Well, he should have.
it sounds a lot like Thor-y.
I wasn't being judgmental.
Yeah,
I was just
a little bit. I was channeling him.
I was just saying it was good. Anyway,
McFeely's a hellhound.
That's what I'm saying.
Apparently.
Yes.
So, thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus
Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.